goodness you take your constitutional walk late at night. Obviously, you've got a guard dog with you and a flashlight. Is that true? Okay, I'm hearing you. I thought the input in the output. He said no guard dog. Okay, but he's got a flashlight. What a guy. Yeah, go ahead and continue with the phase shift diagram and what we were drawing last week. Let's see, where did I put that? Oh, I found the picture. Go ahead, now K2KEY, K2LIW.
It says K2KEY. Well, the comments were, for the first time, I finally understand now in simple language what goes on as far as the voltage and the current along the line and how it works along a coaxial cable. And why was it ever explained in these simple terms? Well, I guess we've sort of tiptoed around it many times and explained it, but never step by step. All right, to finish it up, basically, I was thinking about finishing it up with, let's talk about, you know, the feed line. Finish up with the feed line. You know, exactly what is the feed line and what it does and all this. Make that in simple terms. You know, actually, we talk about feed line, coax, or whatever it is. It's basically, what are we talking about? Transferring energy coming out of your transceiver, the RF energy coming out, and getting it through the antenna. And basically, what we're looking for is the transceiver to a transmission line and an antenna, and trying to get all three basically impedances to be as matched as close as possible. So we start with, you know, the modern transceiver, which usually has somewhere around, we call it about 50 ohms or so. 50, I think it's basically somewhere between 40 and 60 ohms on the average. And what goes from that point on? So I think we'll take it from there, take over.
Yeah, the United States has settled on 50 ohms as a standard for most of our transmitters and antennas. Much of Europe is on a 70 ohm standard. And when you study transmission line coaxial cables, you'll find that a 70 or 73 ohm, somewhere around there, gives you minimum insertion loss. 35 ohms gives you the highest, 35 ohms of impedance gives you the highest power handling capability. 66 ohms, I think, is the one that gives you the highest voltage handling capability. So we settled on 50 as some kind of a compromise of all of that. And it's not a big deal. If you bought a 70 ohm cable and you connect it to your 50 ohm antenna and your 50 ohm transmitter, it's going to work like a charm. You'll end up with a 1.2 standing wave ratio because of that small amount of impedance mismatch. But if you're finding a good source of cable at 70 ohms and the price is right, take it and use it. Don't do what an awful lot of hams have done, of stick their nose up and saying that, no, it's the wrong impedance, I'm not going to use it, I'm afraid my transmitter's going to explode. That's craziness. Particularly some of the 70 ohm hardline at ridiculously cheap prices from the cable television stockyards that we can get a hold of. More than half of the cables on my tower are 70 ohm hardline, cable TV type. And by the way, Joe asked a question earlier. I'm using a Kenwood TS711A, that's what you're listening to. And right now the power I'm getting back from the repeater is such that my needle is pegged even when I plug in the 20 decibel attenuator. So they're running up a lot of steam. I can go down the minimum power out of this rig, 1 watt, and I'm still coming through the repeater with dead full quieting from what I can tell. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, right. We started to talk about cable, and so we'll continue with that. Transmission line, coaxial cable, whatever, we basically could refer to them as unbalanced coaxial type cable, which is available for both averages, as Dick just said, 50 ohms to 75 ohms. And then we have the advertisement on balance line. That's the 300 ohms, 450 ohms, 600 ohms. And as we looked at the chart, we noticed that the feed, the antenna impedances can range in values on the antenna anywhere from 50 outwards to 5,000 ohms. So there you are. We can do some really, you know, innovative ways of measuring different feed lines by just manipulating to the right impedance point on the antenna. So we have a, you know, an impedance, basically, as Tim just said, if you are using 50 ohms, connected to a 50 ohm coax, going to some place in the antenna where it is 50 ohms, that's what we call 50-50, or as Tim just said, that would be 1.0:1. This is basically, you know, theoretically ideal. If we have an antenna feed, feed point is 75 ohms, the feed line is feed and coax to a 50 ohm, well, okay, we've got 75 to 50 around 1.5:1. So you can see it's not a big difference. I know people making a big difference, a big thing out of this, this cable. I mean, I just literally strung up hypothetically on 75 meters when I mentioned about using hardline as a very viable cable. Anybody want to make a comment so far?
I'm going to throw in a quick comment on the word impedance on transmission lines, which is a bit of a mystery to some people. I'm going to try to boil it down to, as Bill would say, something basic that's a little more understandable. I'm going to compare two light bulbs, a flashlight light bulb to a household light bulb. I'm going to round off the numbers a little to get the point across. Assume I've got a flashlight light bulb, and my particular flashlight runs on one battery. One battery is normally 1.5 volts. I'm going to round off the numbers. I'm going to make it a 1-volt light bulb. It's a 1-watt light bulb. And that light bulb, when it's running normally, draws 1 ampere. So how do you measure resistance? Resistance, one of the definitions of resistance is voltage divided by current. As far as my flashlight light bulb is concerned, 1 volt I apply to it, it draws 1 current, 1 ampere. I drive to load 1:1. It is a 1-ohm load, that light bulb. I could say that light bulb, when it's connected to my battery, in my example, represents a 1-ohm impedance. Now I'm going to go over to the household household light bulb. Let me drop a second. I'm going to round off the numbers. Normally your socket voltage in your house is around 120 volts. Let me round it off to 100. And as I said, it is a 100-watt light bulb for my house. The one that's in front of me right now, by the way. It draws 1 ampere also. But I apply 100 volts to it. If I can calculate the wattage, 100 volts times 1 ampere, sure enough, I'm applying 100 watts. But if I wanted to measure the impedance of that light bulb, resistance equals... So, one of them is a 100-ohm impedance, the household light bulb. Their flashlight is a 1-ohm impedance. Both of them are very useful. I can buy coaxial cable that has an impedance as high as 93 ohms. If I go to the Uniform Tubes Company, I can buy coaxial impedance of as low as 10 ohms. If I was building strip line transmission line on my printed circuit board and I made it very wide, I could get even below 10 ohms. Or I could make it very narrow, I can get above 93. Each of those numbers are very useful. Each of those are very useful transmission lines. And the whole reason we use a transmission line is to have something act remotely. In the old days of ham radio, the ham operator lived in the wooden house. Nobody was using the attic. He set up his hand rig on the wooden table in the middle of the attic. One half of his 80-meter dipole went out the north window. The other half of his 80-meter dipole went out the south window. And the transmitter sat in the middle, and he sat there and operated. Well, eventually, he got told he's going to use the basement. but he wanted the antenna still to be in the attic. And the thing that conveys the transmitter power up to the attic is the transmission line. And if it's the right kind of transmission line, where the impedance of the close to
repeater, timeout, cancel.
And if the transmission line is the right kind that comes close to matching the impedance of the antenna, then a high percentage of the power coming out of the transmitter goes up that transmission line, goes to the antenna in the attic, and he's back in operation, even though he's no longer in that cold attic in the wintertime. Maybe this helps a little. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Basically that's what the transmission line is, the method of getting from the basement up to the antenna or in the attic or outside, depending on where you've located the antenna. And there is no reason why you cannot use many different available types of cable. If you are interested in using, for instance, 300 ohm twin line, which has been around quite a bit, quite a long time, and there is a number of different types that have come out. Of course, remember that was very popular with television back when TV started. That was basically the wire was used for many years, 300 ohm twin line. So there's a lot of it around. It was very cheap, and if you went ahead and they used something like that, what would happen? I don't think you have to really make them really worry. Yes, you say, oh my God, 300 ohm, and there's a 50 ohm rig. Gee, that's a mismatch of 6 to 1. And I put in a tuner in there, a wide range tuner, one is electrically remote adjusting tuner. Sure, I could do something. But you could also do the simple thing yourself. You make yourself a simple 50-ohm bale or with just a length of coaxial cable and actually do it yourself. You don't have to go out and actually buy one of the expensive devices that you can't afford it. You know, you just don't throw your hands up. So what I'm trying to bring out is that there are many ways that you can get on the air with very little money invested, if you're really tight for the dollar, which a lot of people are right now, and tell me, oh no, ham radio may be out or can't afford it, everything, because if you look in the magazines, everything's so expensive and all, but an antenna to me is basically the key thing in the whole system that will work well. Before going further, you want to make any comments?
Yes, I do. One of the things that Mel and I have frequently been asked is should I buy the expensive antenna and mount it in a convenient place low to the ground, or should I buy or build a very inexpensive antenna and mount it up high? At least I can say for sure on VHF frequencies, altitude is everything. Ed, the guy you just heard earlier, EAV, WB2EAV, Ed Pillar, Ed Gellinger has famously built very inexpensive mobile antennas for his car out of coat hanger wire, and it worked very well. Lots of guys have built Yagis out of coat hanger wire. If you go to Kent Britton's website, Whiskey Alpha 5 Victor Juliet Bravo .com, you will find an inexpensive Yagi with a wooden boom, where the actual elements themselves are coat hanger wired. Very easy to construct, very inexpensive. So the antenna itself can be quite cheap. You mount it high enough with a good transmission line going to it, you're going to get a lot of performance. A person new to ham radio looks at these advertisements for these very beautiful looking shiny antennas that cost $300, quarter wave ground plane antennas to be mounted in the backyard. You make the assumption that if you spend a lot of money, you're going to get a lot of performance. A simple piece of wire as a dipole could do equally as well if it's in the same location. So as a beginner, until you talk to a bunch of your buddies and find out which one of the kinds of antenna is going to give you the best bang for the dollar, don't necessarily jump into an expensive antenna. The transmitter itself, you're going to have to invest some money unless you buy a used one, and I do like used ones. But the antenna doesn't have to be expensive. And to start off with an inexpensive one, talk to people with it, and decide whether or not you want to buy a more expensive one later. That's my recommendation. K2JEY. K2LAW, we're down to 14 minutes.
Hey, yes, this is K2JEY. Yeah, Roger. This is Dick. Now, I've looked at that. $300, you know, you can't find the flying thing. Beautiful, shiny man, now that verticals and all that thing, Kringle, Wonder, you know, wonderful piece of hardware. I have compared them, I'll tell you, and the stick just hit the nail right on the head, exactly where I was going to put it. There you can go ahead and build yourself a dipole antenna, loper, and have the same result at a fraction of the cost. I mean a fraction. A very small fraction. So go ahead and try it. Nothing's going to blow up, explode, as Dick says. And it's most likely going to surprise you how well it works. And I know today, tight economy. People are shying away from ham radio in many cases because you do look in the books and they do have a lot of equipment. But let me tell you, there are a lot of nice radios around that are secondhand and work real quite well. There's even a few ones that are very underrated that even in new conditions are reasonably priced that will get you on the air and you will have a lot of fun with it. We have today a 10-meter group to get together on Sunday morning, and I have recommended to a number of them, all new bands, to buy something like an ICOM 718. That's basically basic HF rig, 100-watt HF rig, and they're all excited how well they been working out with whatever condition, you know, get out right now. Okay, shall we look at one more thing?
Go right ahead, Bill. We got the time.
Okay, this question is very persistent. We sent me about 6 emails on this. The interest right now in, you know, getting on 6 meters, it seems to be that 6 meters seems to be the one demand, and a lot of people are interested in getting on there, and they've been asking me about a number of antennas for 6 meters. And one of the antennas they're asking me about, I don't know much about this antenna, maybe if you've had experience with it, what they call a TDD, Terminated D-Gain Stick. Are you familiar with that antenna, over?
I'm not sure I am, and if you give me a few more words about it, maybe I'll recognize it.
Got a brief description. That's what I did. I questioned it also because I'm not that familiar with that term. 6 meters was featured once in Warner Magazine, I believe, and it was basically a two sloping wires with terminating systems that are connected together. I'm trying to picture the thing. And it gives me some approximately things here about it. With an 8x1 support about 30 degrees of safety, number 12 wire, and terminating resistance 300 ohms approximately, but you can use between 250 and 500 ohms, and 450 ohms open wire to the shack. Connected to a 4-to-1 balance. So that's the only thing I really know about it, Dick, over.
Okay, NZ Dep at 1912 megapaxels. I'm hearing Ed on the input, but he wasn't coming through the machine at this time. I just Googled the word Tango Victor Bravo antenna, and I'm not getting any good hits. Oh, yes. TVB crazy enough to build your own TV antenna. No, that's not it. Okay, I'm not seeing any hits. It's not a popular enough antenna that at first it's recognized by Google. So, I wonder meters, a lot of people call it the magic band because it's got a little bit of everything. It's got sporadic E, it's got tropo, it's got the ground waves, it's got extended ground waves, it's got a little bit of moonbound, it's got a little bit of everything. It might even have trans-equatorial propagation. So, not too expensive antennas can get you some pretty nice range from time to time on the 6-meter band. Because lots of people are on cable TV these days. It doesn't have anywhere near the reputation it used to have of being a big television interference causing band. To my knowledge, the majority of the operation on 6 meters, let me drop. What was that again, and what will help 6 meters a lot? I'm hearing them on the input. Okay. By the way, none of your transmitting is coming through the repeater as if you had the PL tone not turned on. And by the way, at 11 o'clock, all of a sudden, the repeater went into a PL tone requirement mode. I suddenly discovered that when I couldn't get through. So that's why you're not coming through the repeater. Your PL tone is not there or it's not enough of it. Ed just brought us to EAD, just brought to our attention the fact that as of February 17th, in theory, Channel 2 television, 54 to 60 megacycles, will cease to exist in our area. Again, making 6 meters look very desirable. But the thing I was about to say is that 6 meters, the majority of the people doing DX transmission on 6 meters are using 50.15 megacycles single sideband horizontally polarized. So a 1 to 6 element Yagi antenna, one element of course is a dipole, 1 to 6 element Yagi antenna, homebrew, my first one was homebrew out of a aluminum tubing out of a electrical supply shop. A homebrew Yagi on that band is going to give you an awful lot of performance for the dollar. There's lots of homebrew antenna articles on 6 meters. The Z-beam that he's talking about, the TVB, sounds to me like something that only has as many elements as a dipole. Therefore, it'll work, but it's not going to be as high in performance as it could be if it was a Yagi. My first 6-meter antenna was a simple dipole strung in the tree, and it was a 9-feet long dipole. When I went over to a Yagi, I got a lot of performance. K2KEY, K2RIW. What was that again, Rich?
I think I know what the gentleman is referring to. It's related to a rhombic antenna. It's like half a rhombic and two wires, sloping wires, in a V shape. I don't know what he means by terminated V. The word terminated throws me. But I was right in my brain, and I think I've seen that like in the ARRL handbook and elsewhere, in the same section as Lopic.
Is there an end phase that's terminated at the far end?
And if you did terminate an end phase step at the far end, how would it differ from a small beverage antenna? Over to you, Ed.
Maybe I've been drinking some beverages and that's the name to fix stuff. One of them has a termination at the end. I think I found the problem. I found out upward EMHC was being hit the wrong button to turn off the PL. I said, okay, now. Meanwhile, what I said before, it reminded me of an antenna from 1912 with the terminating resistors.
Yeah. The only reason you put terminating resistors on an antenna is because you want extreme broad bandwidth, reason number one. Or in the case of a beverage antenna, you want unidirectional propagation on a simple wire. A beverage antenna is a very long wire, parallel to the ground, with a 600 ohm resistor at the far end. The signal goes down the wire once, hits the termination and dies, but all the signal that radiates from that wire is in a primarily one direction. If you left off the terminating resistor, the energy left over would reflect back, and the signal would not propagate also in the other direction. You'd have a very poor front-to-back ratio. So, beverage antenna gets a very good front-to-back ratio because of the terminating resistor, and it's a very broadband antenna. A rhombic antenna has a terminating resistor, very broadband. So in either case, unless you transmit, unless you dedicate a whole lot of real estate to the antenna, you don't get much gain. A Yagi antenna, you've got multiple elements, you get gain. A Beveridge antenna, you have multiple wavelengths of length of wire, it gives you gain. Same thing for rumbling. But if it's Z antenna, if it's an inverted Z with terminating resistors, the good news is you'll get a kind of omnidirectional transmission, and you'll get a lot of bandwidth. But you don't need a lot of bandwidth. In the case of a 6-meter band, everything takes place, with rare exception, between 50.0 and 50.3. 95% of all your operation is there until you have a real boomer of a band opening, and then people start setting up the band to get away from all of the QRMLs. But other than that, you don't need bandwidth. You do need some altitude. You do need some gain. If you want to have a whole lot of fun, that's an opinion. K2KEY, K2RAW, we're down to 4 minutes.
Okay, I'll look into this and see if we get more information about this. A terminated C beam. Something fascinating about the way it's described as a terminated C beam for 6 meters. Sounds like possibly more wire from what it says here is the wire antenna, because they said it's some 12 wire and all, so it may be some kind of a, maybe somewhat of a directional antenna, and maybe I can say a four-man small type of antenna system that doesn't require a heck of a lot of real estate nor a lot of set, and at the same time, you know, maybe also has a low profile. This is another thing to be considered, a low profile antenna that, you know, many of, just a lot of these emails I get are, help me out, I can't put up an antenna, I get, what do you suggest for my location, they give me all the details, measurements, things, and what should I put, you know, as an antenna, shelf type antenna or whatever, so this seems to be a predominant situation with a lot of people in both the urban areas by we live in, plus all these CCR type of these covenant type of situations to take over.
Go ahead, Rich.
A V-beam, maybe I didn't make it clear, a V-beam is generally two horizontal wires in a V-shape, V is horizontal, parallel. And the direction is the direction of the obtuse angle of the beam.
Okay, sounds like half of a rhombic, which is going to give you not very much gain, lots of bandwidth, if the terminations are handled correctly. I think we've got to look into it a little bit further, but a person getting on 6 meters, for traditional reasons, I think should start off with dipoles and Yagis, the most popular antennas on that band, with Yagi being 95% of the operation, in my opinion. Okay, we've got a minute and a half left. This was TechNet number 1,222 of the series that began in September of 1982. And guaranteed there's going to be more digital television discussed next week, because it's a hot subject. 73-year-old, be kind to each other. Mel, K2KEY, K2RIW.
Hey. We'll do it again next week, as you say. 73 to all. Have a great week, and I'll look into this and get some more information. And just whet my appetite with terminated speaking. And we'll see if we can get some more discussion on next week. This is